become thy fount of every blessing. Tune my heart to sing thy grace. Streams of mercy never ceasing call for songs of loudest praise. It's one of our most beloved hymns, but it's much more than a beautiful hymn. It's an autobiography of a man's life, and it is the testimony of faith that many of us share. There is a deep connection with this hymn and who we are as Baptists and who we are as Americans. And the connection is George Whitefield, the most influential preacher of the 18th century, who became a cultural icon in colonial America. George Whitefield was an Anglican priest. He was a contemporary of Charles and John Wesley. He was a slender man with an engaging, handsome presence, and he drew thousands of people to hear his rhetorical eloquence. It was an age when most clergy read their sermons from a long manuscript with a dull monotone. But George Whitefield captivated his listeners with impassioned fervor, dramatic oratory, and emotional outburst. People had never heard anyone preach like George Whitefield. When he preached, they said, people wept. They would cry. They would shout. And they would faint. Thousands of people came to hear his commanding voice. He drew over 25,000 to the Boston Commons. Thousands more came to New York and Philadelphia. He traveled over 5,000 miles in colonial America, preaching the gospel of streams of mercy that are never ceasing. The movement that he started is known today as the Great Awakening. Now, George Whitefield was not beloved by the established clergy of his day, because here was a man who was upsetting the status quo. He was creating unrest in the congregations. He was going against the grain. And those who followed George Whitefield became known as the New Lights. And they were driving a wedge between the old lights. There was a congregational minister in Boston who became a New Light. His name was Shubal Stearns. And after he became a New Light, he decided rather than exist in controversy and conflict, he was going to move to a place where he could practice his faith without resistance. And so he and his family migrated to the South, and they settled in Randolph County, North Carolina. And they started a little church, the Sandy Creek Baptist Church. He came with his sister Molly and her husband Daniel. And Peggy, you know that they moved a few miles to present-day Davidson County and started the Abbots Creek Baptist Church. Historians tell us that the Sandy Creek Baptist Church and the First Baptist Church of Charleston, South Carolina, are considered to be the mother churches of all Baptist churches in the South. And much of what we're doing in this service, the proclamation of the Word, offering God's grace, opening the doors of the church, singing and praying, go back to that Sandy Creek tradition. And it all started with Shubal Stearns, who was under the influence of the preaching of George Whitefield. There was another minister who was greatly influenced by George Whitefield, a Presbyterian minister by the name of Samuel Davies. Davies was mesmerized by George Whitefield's rhetorical eloquence, by the power and the force of his charisma. And he decided to adopt that style in his own preaching. And soon, Samuel Davies became known as one of the greatest speakers in colonial Virginia. He influenced many, many people, including a little boy who came to listen to him preach, who was captivated by the power of his words, by his impassioned delivery. And this little boy realized, if you're going to influence people, if you're going to inspire people to a great cause, the way you deliver your message is vitally important. This little boy grew up and joined a great cause. And one day in Richmond, Virginia, following the example of his pastor, Samuel Davies, with passion and eloquence and power and force, he stood and said, "Give me liberty or give me death." And Patrick Henry always said that he owed his rhetorical skills to Samuel Davies, who modeled his from George Whitefield. Now, George Whitefield, in colonial times, never sought the sanction of the state to preach. And when you have a state church like you did in Virginia, he was going against the grain. But it was George Whitefield who became one of the early advocates of religious liberty and freedom of religion. Because George Whitefield said, "We do not answer to the state, we answer to a higher power." When George Whitefield left, Samuel Davies took up the cause of religious liberty. If you go to Williamsburg and they start talking about religious liberty, there are two names that they will mention. They'll mention the name of Samuel Davies and George Whitefield. Because George Whitefield became one of the, or Samuel Davies became one of the great advocates for religious liberty in Virginia. Someone who heard his voice was Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson, at the end of his life, considered the Virginia Statue of Religious Freedom to be one of his greatest life accomplishments, along with the Declaration of Independence. It became the template of the First Amendment to the Constitution that guarantees religious liberty. And it goes back to the influence of George Whitefield. But the thing you may not know about George Whitefield is that George Whitefield was a British minister. And that's where the story of our hymn begins. With a little boy by the name of Robert Robinson, whose father died when he was 5 years old. Without anyone to look after him, he became a rebellious, an unruly child. And when he was 14, they sent him to London, where he quickly became associated with the wrong crowd. He associated with a group of ruffians. And a few years later, when he was 17, they decided one Sunday afternoon to have a lot of fun. They said, "We're going to find a religious meeting and we're going to go and heckle the preacher." It's been a long time since that's happened here. So they decided to go and heckle this preacher just for fun. The preacher was none other than George Whitefield. And his sermon that day, he started by talking about a group of people who came to heckle a preacher. The preacher was John the Baptist. And the hecklers were the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the text of his sermon was from the third chapter of Matthew, the 7th verse, when John the Baptist said to them, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee the wrath to come?" Well, it was like he knew they were coming. And they did not heckle the preacher. but he was captivated by his message. He was greatly troubled. He was convicted by what he heard. Robert Robinson was not converted that day, but he looks back and said that was the day that God started to pursue him, and would not let him go. As he would later say, Jesus sought me as a stranger, wandering from the fold of God. But 3 years later, Jesus came to rescue him from danger, bought with his precious blood. When Robert Robinson turned his heart to Christ, when he tuned his heart to sing his grace, when he surrendered to those streams of mercy, never ceasing, he climbed to the mountain of God's redeeming love. He not only became a Christian, but he soon became a minister. And in the second year of his ministry, he wrote the words of this beautiful hymn. He talks about his journey. He talks about how God rescued him as a stranger, how he raised his Ebenezer. Hither by thy help I've come. It was God who saved him, God who rescued him. But in the third stanza, Robinson, who probably at that point in his life was more dedicated, more committed, more faithful than at any other time, recognized a weakness. He begins by acknowledging that he is a debtor. And he asks God, and this is a powerful image, he asks God to bind his wandering heart to him like a fetter. You know what a fetter is? It's a shackle. It's what was used to shackle slaves, prisoners. He recognized there was something inside of his heart that even though he had committed his life to God, he was raising his Ebenezer. He was like the Apostle Paul. I know what I need to do. I know what I should not do, but I do just the opposite. I know Kay said something about getting tongue-twisted in that. Kay, the Apostle Paul was not only tongue-twisted, he was life-twisted. And we all are, aren't we? We all have that tendency to wander, to leave the God that we love. It's not what we want to do. Maybe you're here today in person, but your heart is somewhere else. You're not as faithful. You're not as committed. Ed Brannon, in his offertory prayer, talked about being committed and living this life, being involved in ministry. And maybe there was one time that that was you, but now you've fallen away. Because isn't that the story of all of us? We don't want to be there, do we? No one likes it when we've wandered away from the God we love. It makes us feel bad. We're like the Apostle Paul. We know that we shouldn't be there, but that's where we are. And it makes us feel miserable. Paul said, "O wretched man that I am, because I have wandered away from the heart of God." Robert Robinson wandered. He was originally a Methodist minister. He left the Methodist Church to join the Baptist Church. Now, most of us would say he found the light. That's not really wandering, at least not too far away. But he didn't stay a Baptist very long. He wandered away from the Baptist. He became a Unitarian. And then he wandered away from the Unitarian Church, and he became nothing. He never went to church. He never expressed his faith. He had left the God that he loved. Here's the truth. Our tendency to wander is matched by God's willingness to pursue. Our tendency to wander is matched by God's willingness to pursue. No matter how far away we wander, God will always be there, always searching, always pursuing, calling us back, calling us back. This is what happened to Robert Robinson. One day, when he had long ago wandered away from the God he loved, he got into a stagecoach. And there was another passenger. There was a lady in the stagecoach, and she was humming and softly singing a hymn. Come, thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace. She could tell that he had a reaction to what she was singing, and she said, "Sir, do you know that hymn?" And the story is that Robert Robinson looked at her and said, "Madam, I am the poor, unhappy soul who wrote that hymn, and I would give 1,000 lives to feel today as I felt then." And the passenger looked at him and said, "Sir, the streams of mercy are still never ceasing." Maybe George Whitefield, or maybe Robert Robinson, heard George Whitefield preach a sermon called "The Folly and Danger of Parting with Christ," in which he said, "What? Do you think your soul's of no value? Do you esteem them as not worth saving? Are your pleasures worth more than your souls? Had you rather regard the diversions of this life than the salvation of your souls? If so, you will never be partakers with him in glory. But if you come unto him, he will give you a new nature. He will supply you with grace here, and he will bring you to glory hereafter. And there you may sing praises and hallelujahs to the Lamb forever. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart. Oh, take and seal it. Seal it for thy courts above."
Mercy never ceasing, call for songs of
wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. Maybe that's where you are today. But the good news of the gospel is that God's grace never fails, that our tendency to wander is surpassed by God's willingness to pursue. If there is a spiritual decision, if you'd like to become a member of this congregation, we're going to stand in the Sandy Creek tradition. We're going to open the doors of this church and invite you to come to Jesus Christ and to come into this fellowship.